Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have some interesting news about tournaments. Then we're going to talk a little bit about some changes to organized play. And then we're going to have some spoiler the next chapter pack. And then finally, some non-existent closing comments.
All right, John, this is episode 11. And we got some splaining to do. Where were you last week?
On the cast, I don't know what you're talking about.
So for those of you who are listening to this years down the road, as we've now risen to fame or whatever it is, last week's episode we delayed, as did 2C1C, to do an April Fool's episode. And so John appeared on 2C1C as Kyle, and Kyle appeared on our show as John. And I think it worked out rather well. I still haven't listened to 2C1C's version yet because I have been swamped. But how did your recording go, John?
It was fun. It was really difficult for me actually to review cards like Kyle would because we have very different perspectives on the game. But it was fun. It was a good time.
See, I think you guys get off easy because if you get a review wrong, you just say, oh, no, I was pretending to be Kyle, or Kyle gets to say, I was just pretending to be John. That's why I was wrong. But if you get it right, you claim credit for it.
Yeah, I guess that's a bonus of the April Fool's joke.
I do want to give full credit for the idea of doing the host swap. I think it was a lot of fun. I think it was a neat spin on this. And the idea came from Kyle at Worlds. After Worlds, we were at the bar at Joe Sensor's, and he brought this up. But I thought it was a great idea then, and then it fell off the radar. And Kyle brought it up again a couple weeks ago when we pushed for it. We put that together.
Yeah, so that really was a good idea. I'll take full responsibility for it. I mean, since I was Kyle for that short period of time, I think I get all the good and none of the bad, right?
That's all the good and none of the bad.
Perfect. Well, then I had a brilliant idea.
So aside from that, actually, if you wanted to listen to Kyle's opinion as John or John's opinion as Kyle, it's definitely a great chance to listen to these as crossover episodes. If you don't often listen to 2C1C, you'll get a taste of John, your usual taste of John.
Unplugged, unedited.
wild and crazy. But there's actually another podcast that aired last week as an April Fool's joke, which I would also recommend people check out, and this was the Cardboard of the Rings version. Now, they have been running for a very long time, and they have constantly claimed that they're going to get Nate French on, and obviously for their April Fool's episode, they did get Nate French on, and they did actually get Nate French on. So they finally got their long-sought-after interview after all that build-up. So if you're interested in listening to Nate talk about game design, talk about game design philosophy, talk about some early iterations of Lord of the Rings, which, if you know anything about the game, are really quite surprising, definitely check out Cardboard of the Rings. With all that said, this week's episode, you know, the last four have ran long. This one's going to be really short for a bunch of reasons. Not only did it take extra time to coordinate last week's and it was released late, this is Easter weekend, I have guests over, I'm really tied down. And last
week, as well,
I'm actually playing this on a completely jerry-rigged computer. I have a completely different cooling system set up so it won't explode. My computer has been dying more and more on me, and I have the thing open with a few sets of fan and a way. You don't need to know the details. The point is, in the last couple of days, I bought all of what I need to make a new rig. It was a lot of fun. I went way overboard. I always do. I'm gonna get quite a nice rig for this. It was just too tempting. But I'm currently doing this on a computer that has just enough hard drive space left to record this episode, maybe, and only if it's short. For the recording with Kyle, I actually had to delete files halfway through the episode from my computer just so I could keep recording because of all these hard drive failures and other things I've had due to heat problems. Anyway, not a pretty picture, so we won't record too long.
Always some interesting topics.
We do. What would you like to start with? There's a little bit of tournament news for some cards from the chapter pack, from the latest chapter pack.
Let's talk about tournament news, and that'll go right into my topic that's on the top of my head, which is the competitive scene.
Well, if we're going to do that transition, then maybe we'll talk about some other things first, because there was an item of news, not official FFG news. I guess official FFG news was that the new chapter pack officially hit stores, which is, you know, unexciting, if true. But Team Covenant, a site and store that we've mentioned quite a few times on the cast in Tulsa, released a video talking a little bit about things, how things were going to change going forward. They created a lot of content like unboxing videos, chapter pack reviews, and things like that. And some of that is going to change. They're launching a new website, and they're changing store locations from what I gathered from their video. So some of that content that they tend to put up will be put on hold. But they did mention that they're going to sort of switch to a new player focus and sort of mimic what they've done with Star Wars, like a lot of new player guides. So I imagine that we could expect that kind of support for Thrones 2.0 once they're up and running again.
And that'd be great. I mean, I think that's important. And they haven't been really doing their Thrones content for quite a while, so.
Yeah, it's been since Worlds, really, that things have slowed down on their Sloan? Good Lord.
They didn't even really do anything for Gen Con, right? Like, I didn't see them anywhere near as active as Gen Con prior, so.
They did post videos afterwards of your match, for instance, but it took them a while to get it up. That's true. But they did have a lot of Worlds content. But yeah, I think they're going through a transition, changing actual brick-and-mortar locations as well as updating their website. So certainly a lot of extra work there. The other thing then before we touch onto the tournament news is that we've actually been contacted by FFG, by some marketing people. They'd like to send us spoiler cards for upcoming chapter packs. So this is something that we've sort of thought about doing but never really reached out actively to them. But when they asked us if we wanted to do it, we said, yeah, I think we will.
Very exciting.
So this episode we actually have not one, not two, but three spoilers from the next chapter pack to share with you guys. So I'm excited. And they're from a favorite house of mine, but I won't tell you which.
Yeah, that's going to be really hard. I haven't quite seen the spoilers yet, but listeners, it's Greyjoy.
So you were saying tournament news.
Yes. So I heard that there's already been a Solaris win, or a Solar, or whatever it's called.
Doran Solar, yeah.
Thank you, Doran Solar.
I mean, there have been a fair few tournaments, and people have been posting this, but the news that's fresh off the press for us is that in today's weekly tournament in Padiz in Spain, Tarkin won with a Doran Solar HOD deck running Prince's Plan, and convincingly took first. So that's a thing.
Mm-hmm. We kind of knew it was going to be a thing, right?
Well, yes and no. As HOD, I suspected it would. As main decking, I'm still not convinced.
I agree with main decking, because you have to build your deck around it for it to be really effective.
Exactly. But I think in our chapter pack review, we started off saying, this is an amazing card, but here are some reasons it's not as good as you think it is. Because people were comparing it to Bloodthirst, at least on our end. And I don't know how your chapter pack review went.
Well, Kyle didn't even like it.
Oh, Kyle didn't like it.
He never picks good cards, right? So, I mean, I'm glad that I knew it was a good card.
See, when we had Kyle on here as you, I said, you review the cards as yourself, and then we'll throw in some, you know, we'll misread some cards, and we'll use the word shaggy for no reason whatsoever. You know, we'll throw in some flavor, but I wasn't going to force him to think like you. No one wants to think like you.
I tried to think like Kyle, and I kept talking about my old decks. So I was like, you know, that's the Stark DW deck. It's the top deck in the meta and stuff like that. It was funny. It was fun. I did some stuff that I'm sure Kyle wouldn't have done, but I just went, you know, a little overboard with my Kyle channeling.
We're still talking about basically the first topic, but there were some people who had actually reached out to me, and they're like, John sounds a little different, or hold on, is something wrong with his mic? And then, you know, the next comment, like 3 minutes later, is like, oh. So I enjoyed the fact. I mean, the point wasn't to trick anyone. It was just to do something different and play it straight. And I enjoyed doing it. So whether you enjoyed listening to it or not, that's secondary. Really, we do this for ourselves, not for you guys.
Yeah, we don't get paid.
Okay, so I guess we can launch into that first topic of yours.
Yeah, I want to talk about the competitive scene and competitive play and how FFG is shaping their competitions. Yesterday, I went to a SC in Kingston, which I drove 2 hours there and 2 hours back for, and there were some people that drove in from Montreal, 4 hours each way, and I think that's awesome. I think traveling for Thrones, having a car ride, playing with people that you really like and get along with, and I love the Montreal meta, so it was great playing with them, is the best part of the game. But what happened was fewer people traveled than normal, so we got probably two or three less players than anticipated because of one of the new rulings. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Alex, and I don't know how many of our listeners are, but if you win more than one store championship, you actually have to forfeit your prize to the next person that hasn't won a store championship. So if you and second have won, the third gets the prize. You cannot win more than one buy.
Okay, that's the buy or the plaque or the everything or the cards or the dex boxes?
So it's the buy 100%.
Okay.
And I'm not sure about the rest of the stuff because I always give that away myself, so I don't know.
Okay, what's your source on this? So
there's actually a one-page rules document that comes in the store championship kit that explains this, and I didn't believe it until someone showed it to me. So we actually went to the front and got the store champion kit because it's being enforced in some places and not in others. Because of that, some of the Montreal meta didn't travel because to them, they would think that people who have already won a buy would play either non-competitive decks, just kind of joke decks. And also they felt if they won a buy, it wasn't as valuable for them to travel for 4 hours to try to win something they couldn't actually get.
Okay, I have some disagreements on that. I mean, I can understand their reasoning, but I have very different reasoning on that. I'm wondering, though, is this actually new? Because I never got a chance to read the actual store championship and regional documents from previous years.
Yes.
And I know that they used to send a piece of paper as well, and we had, you know, people who didn't know what they were doing deck list checks because it said to do them in there, but I've never actually seen the document.
So it's new this year. So we have an extremely good TO in Montreal that is always plays it by the rules, which I think is good because they're a competitive meta and they're always very strict on the rules. But he reads all these documents to make sure he follows them. And he actually said to me when I won my second store championship, you can't have a second buy, even though it was like, you know, they mentioned it, just said, you know, what did you do with your buy? Did you give it to whatever? And I said, I kept it. I had both buys. I don't think anyone read the rules here in Ottawa, to be honest. You know, it's a one sheet that no one
Ottawa
reads.
Being the capital of Canada, no one reading the rules in Ottawa is
not surprising.
Plausible. Exactly.
Right. So I recently actually posted to give my buy to the second person to find out who that was because obviously I want to follow the rules now that I know of them. But he said to me, yeah, you couldn't have that buy. And I said, what are you talking about? And I asked a whole bunch of people. In fact, I asked some people from FFG and they said, there's no rule about that. And then, sure enough, at this tournament, I found it in the store championship. So I couldn't find it online anywhere. It's like this half-hidden rule, but it's affecting a bunch of the players in different ways.
Now, I'm not sure why that rule exists. I can understand you not being able to have two buys because of the way they want to structure regionals. That I can understand. The forcing you to pass it on to the next person under, that I can't really. That seems a bit strange to me because it's just this idea of sharing the wealth, which really for regional buy is it's a luxury item that's only for the next tournament. So I'm not sure I understand the justification for the rules. That said, I've never gone to a Thrones tournament because of the prize support. And maybe other people have, but I mean, the prize support is fun, but it's not that good for this game.
Well, I'll be honest with you. Like, as a competitive player, if I want to try to get my highest chance to get a buy at Nationals, specifically Gen Con, then I want to try to win a regional. And my best chance of winning a regional is if I have a buy in the first round, right? Like, that makes sense. So if I could go to three SCs and get three buys because we have three regionals that I can get to, I'd like that. I'd like to do that. But if I can only get one, that might be the tipping point on deciding to drive for 4 hours, for instance, which I can understand.
I don't know if that's necessarily a tipping point because I also don't go to a tournament expecting to win. You know, I don't go to a tournament if the only outcome I'll be happy with is winning. I go to the tournament for the play.
Right, but if you go for the play and you're going to have a good time, but you also want to be able to get that buy so you can get a buy in a regional, and, you know, it's a 4-hour drive. That's a long time. You know, maybe 3 hours you would go no matter what, but 4 hours, maybe you want to have a chance at that prize.
4 hours, it is a long drive, and I'm not entirely sure that store championships are structured for that, in that a regional is sort of supposed to be regrouping people from the region. Store championships are handed out to almost anyone. It's not all that limiting. Okay. And are therefore you're expecting to have them.
You know. I want our community to have the biggest tournaments possible all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And if the difference for that, adding 3 to 4 people to a tournament, is just changing how we're giving out buys, we should do that. Right? Like, if regionals are where we're supposed to move, can I only win one regional and I can't go to both Canadian and American nationals with buys if I win multiple regionals?
Well, being able to go to a regional or a national that isn't yours because you won a regional is another slightly fishy aspect to this. let's be honest about that, too, although because it used to be North American nationals, that wasn't as big a deal in the past. But you could also see the argument playing out in the opposite direction. People who want to play and win and so on go, well, why do I bother? The same 4 people that won the last 4 SCs are going to show up again. And I have no chance. I'm not saying that's a better argument. I'm saying that's basically the same argument. If prize support is motivating you, you could just as easily argue that it works in one direction as the other.
Right, but those 4 people, I would assume, if they're actually competitive players and what they're all about is winning, they're going to be trying to rise to the challenge. Like, that should actually be motivating them, right? That they have these, you know, top-tier players, like, motivates them to try to strive for that. Now, if they weren't a top-tier player, and they just didn't want to show up their SC because it wouldn't be any fun because these really competitive guys would show up and crush everyone, that's a different story. But, you know, those people tend to be happy because, like, at the SC in Kingston, we didn't take any of the prizes. The top 4 was Ottawa and Montreal, and I think we left with 1 playmat because someone didn't have it, and everything else we left for the store, for the guys that were there.
Yeah, but you weren't following the assigned distribution of prizes then by doing that. Right? I mean, technically, what exactly the rule document said.
It would have distributed down to our people from Ottawa and Montreal, and we chose to leave it for the people in Kingston.
I mean, I'm in the situation where if the opportunity to play Thrones shows up, given my schedule and timing and travel, I go, and for me, the prize support is not a motivating factor. I can understand that for some people it is. I have trouble putting myself in the position where store championship prize support is what is driving you to go to one. I really do. Now, that doesn't make it wrong for you to be in that position.
Yeah, for me, I think it's important that Thrones tries to cater to both groups, both the casual player and the competitive player.
The casual player doesn't need to be motivated by prize support. I mean, there are just as many competitive players who are motivated by the prestige of winning these events, of saying, you know, I played a different deck in every single one, top 5, of whatever their personal challenge is.
Right, and that's the type of competitive player I am, but there's other types of competitive players, and those players particularly don't want to go to an event where they can't win anything, and it makes the event feel to them like it's not worth it. So they show up and they bring a silly deck, and they have an okay time. But then they leave and they think, you know, it would have been great if I could have played competitively against some people here. Because other players like myself will show up with a janky deck and just play, and then they'll be like, well, you know, I beat John, but I didn't really feel like it was a real victory because he was playing this ridiculously tier 2 deck that was super obvious, you know, like...
But I mean,
HOD Scourge.
We can easily get to the point where you have 7 or 8 SCs in your town. I mean, I don't know exactly how the distribution is for something more popular like Netrunner right now, but I imagine it's quite common to have multiples in a town. And at that point, it really, you know, you're not driving very far to go get to them, and you probably do want things to be shaken up a bit and the top players to, you know, maybe try something new.
But we don't want buys to be freebies. So if we have 10 SCs and we only have 12 players, that means like everyone gets a buy at the regional.
Yeah,
so now we're all going to go.
I'd be more.
Now I'm going to drive to Montreal so we can all sit out the first round. Like, that doesn't sound fun to me.
That's entirely true. But that's why I think handing the buy down is the mistake here, not not allowing you to accumulate multiples.
Right. But, I mean, FFG says they're trying to reshape their competitive format. They're coming out with a new, tournament program, which is great because the one they have sucks. And they said that they're going to I heard unofficially, and I'll say that it's an unsubstantiated rumor, that they're going to be changing a little bit of their competitive scene. So if that's the case, why are they changing it this way? what was wrong with the last way? I like the last way.
I mean, I don't actually know what the last way was. I know how stores handled it because I went to a couple SEs, but I never read the document. So
I guess, yeah, it's true. I never read the document. I didn't read the document until I was in Kingston, and I said, I want to see the rule. I want someone to prove to me this is the real rule.
And I remember being in New York, and I think I can't remember how many players we had, 40 something, and then they announced it was going to be a top 8, and I go, what, really? You know, it was like 48 players or something like that. I go, is that supposed to be top 8? And yeah, it turns out according to the rules it is. So, you know, until I have read those documents, I can't say what it was and what it's changing towards.
So, Alex, I just want to be clear here. You're saying that you don't know the rules regarding some things?
That's probably a good place to start. All right, John, I'm excited. This is the first time we get to do this. We're officially spoiling – well, not the first time because we have officially spoiled champ cards before with specific permission where we went through all this. But this is the first time they've been sent to us, and I even got to pick. I got to pick which house I wanted, and I said Greyjoy because I wouldn't consult with anybody else. I just automatically say Greyjoy.
Yep.
And so we actually get to spoil all three cards from the upcoming chapter pack for Greyjoy. And let's start off with an attachment. John, want to read this one out for us?
It's called Kettle Drum. It has the setup keyword, which makes attachments better. It's Greyjoy characters only. Attached character gets +1 strength and gains Intimidate. Wow, I was so happy with setup and so less happy now.
It's also an item. It costs 1.
These
are important. We will link, of course, the cards. There aren't very many Greyjoy attachments, period. And there aren't that many instances of Intimidate in the game. So I can
And Intimidate's see- good. It's good. I mean, +1 strength is okay. Intimidate's good. If this let you draw a card when you played it, I'd actually play it all the time.
I don't know about all the time.
Well, I mean, Greyjoy, draw a card, plus it has setup, right? So it's not like you're ever losing out with this card. If it let you draw a card, but it doesn't. Which makes me sadder.
Yeah, I think there are things you can do with Intimidate. Obviously, you can push on opposed challenges. Gaining +1 strength and having Intimidate is reasonable. The thing is, Intimidate is also kind of tricky. It only really does anything when you're attacking, and it will also negate strength that you can contribute from
your
other
own characters.
Yeah. So, you know, this to me, maybe if you're going in a HOD grief deck where you've got a central character that you're going to get attacking twice, you've got initiative control, and you just want to make sure that, you know, with...
Okay, you just mentioned a bad deck and tried to justify the card with that.
I suppose.
So with that, we're going to move on.
So quickly.
It's not good. Is it good, Alex?
It's the easiest way to get Intimidate in the game.
No, it's printed on cards, Intimidate. Like, Carl
just
has it.
To gain Intimidate.
Oh, sure. And does that make it good?
No.
Okay.
All right, so our next card then is a Greyjoy event called Reborn from the Sea. It's a House Greyjoy only event. It is a response. After you win dominance, choose a non-army Greyjoy character in your dead pile and put it into play.
Okay, that's good.
Why is it good, John? Tell me more, tell me more.
Really? Well, you see, Greyjoy has some really good characters, like one of my favorites, Asha, for instance. And they do have a lot of saves, but once in a while, burn happens. And this allows you to put your character back into play, which is cool. Now, you have to win dominance, which sucks. It's non-army, which, it's not horrible, since Greyjoy does have some good armies. Is it better than Greyjoy's other saves? Will it actually appear in a deck, even though I think it's good? I'm not sure. I don't see a lot of decks that slots into, actually.
The obvious comparison is Risen from the Sea. aside from the fact that almost all the text is, of the name is identical, and the fact that, you know, this is fulfilling a similar role, a save lets you keep a character on the board, which is important. Secondly, the save Risen from the Sea actually does allow you to bypass burn to some extent.
As long as, yeah, one strength.
As long as it's the one strength difference. So you're right. In cases, burn is the biggest case where you start to look at Reborn from the Sea instead of some of these other saves that you can do.
And it's an event slot, though, which Greyjoys actually has trouble with because they have some nice events. Mostly cancel, but nice events.
Yeah, and I think the problem is mostly that after you win dominance thing.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't a ton of non-kneelers. There aren't a ton of ways of ensuring you're gonna win dominance. You don't have a ton of ways of winning dominance. You don't have vigilant. You don't have tools like that that tend to push you over. So I think it may actually be hard to use this, even though it lets you go back over any of the characters that have died throughout the game and pick that character, pick the best of those, and put that into play. So I think this is really interesting, but I think unless you're seeing a ton of burn, you're probably going to run a Risen from the Sea over this.
I have to agree.
In most cases. I mean, and I'm not even always running a Risen from the Sea.
This is one of these cards that basically is falling fate to the fact that we have, you know, 2,000 other cards already in the pool. Because I think it's a good card. It's just there's better ones.
Yeah. And are there other good, reliable ways of winning dominance?
Greyjoy has a couple other dominance effects, but all of them aren't that good. So.
The King's Moot is the one?
Yeah, the one where they could kneel and draw two cards and gain power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like it. Your house isn't doing well here, Alex.
Well, I like it. That just doesn't mean I'm going to play it. I think from a design perspective, it's interesting. Just like the other one, I actually think, you know, it's the kind of card that may... that fills in niches that we would have liked to see filled in at some point, which is more playable attachments, intimidate in a way to grant it to characters so that you can use things like...
But it's too late in the cycle. That's the problem. It's too late in the game. If that came out...
And I say the same for Reborn. I think it's a very interesting niche, and you got to give credit to them for finding a niche this late in the game as well, because a lot of things have been done.
Yep.
And, you know, Greyjoy's themes are saves, but how are you going to make a save that hasn't been done? And this is sort of it. And I like that. I appreciate that. That doesn't mean I'm playing the card.
It's actually similar to the next card.
No,
which is awesome art.
Because this next card I'm going to play. But not for the reason people will think.
Oh, I know why you're playing it.
Okay, all right. Go ahead and read the card and then tell me why I'm playing it.
It's 2 gold. Iron Island Reaver. He's a raider. He's 2 strength. He's a tricon, and that's why you're playing him, Alex.
That's why I'm playing him.
If an effect would discard one or more cards from an opponent's deck that has no cards remaining in it, that opponent must choose and discard one card at his or her command instead. So, intrigue icons are tough in Greyjoy. A tricon for 2 is sexy. He's got no special ability, really, because mill sucks. However, you know, some shaggy players might try to build a mill deck, maybe a Maester mill deck, where they can mill your opponent and then discard all their cards using Island Reaver. You know, I'll probably build that just to see. But
we do have tricons in Greyjoy. We have Euron, we have Asha, and we have the new Wex Pike, and that
right.
is
any at 2 cost other than the new Wex Pike, who's 2 for 1,
who's unique,
yeah,
and prized. No. So for that, and a raider trait, which is perfectly usable, and, you know,
an awesome
with an
art.
Intrigue icon and awesome art, yeah, I'm going to play this card. And he'll make it into a couple of decks, and it won't be for his effect. It'll just be for being a tricon, which to me makes a huge difference in allowing me to shape the board, especially when you're playing some of those high-claim games and you need to make sure that you can hit the hand. I just think that's huge. So I like it. I think this is a case of power creep. I think this is a case of filling in a weakness in Greyjoy that if the game was going to go on for longer, I would think this is a bad design decision. But here I gained a playable card, so I don't think it is. I do want to talk about that ability for a little while, but maybe if you have anything not about that ability to go on, and then I can start ranting about
it. There's nothing else about the ability. We've explained it. Tricon, 2 gold. It's good.
Yeah, this is. I'm going to use this as an opportunity to rant a little bit about Mill, because I've mentioned not liking Mill on the cast before, and very recently I was actually teaching someone a game. They'd come over, and we were playing a couple of games, and he looked through a couple of cards, and he said, "Oh, you know, these effects that discard from decks seem kind of neat, because I realized how important intrigue challenges were, because you're discarding from hand." And to be fair, this is someone who doesn't have a lot of experience with these games, and I explained a little bit on how, well, you know, it doesn't really work that way, because your hand is a resource you can play from, and you're going to spend those cards, and you have a much more limited set. Well, your deck, chances are, there'll still be 20 unused cards or 30 unused cards at the end of the game. So making them there be 31 unused cards isn't going to make a difference. And that sort of sunk in, but he was still trying to argue, well, no, but surely these are good, or they wouldn't have printed so many of them. and that's a terrible argument. And I made that case as well. And this card is trying to fix one of the problems with Mill, and that's that Mill isn't a win condition. But that's only a tiny portion of the problem. So I do want to dig into it. So the first thing is Mill is a win condition. How many cards do you have to mill for Mill to be a win condition, John?
Well, now it seems it depends how many cards your opponent has at their command.
Right, but I mean, even without this card, the sort of idea was if you get them down to zero cards,
I don't know, 40?
And they're not drawing. Right, exactly. It's I tend to calculate it's about 37 cards in four turns for it to matter, because they're going to draw about three cards a turn. They might have a four-card setup, so on. So 37 cards in four turns is a lot of cards to go through, and all that does is deprive my opponent of his draw on turn five, which is not negligible, right? I can Valor, and then he's stuck, presumably. But it doesn't win me the game.
No. I mean, the best decks that do this are Maester decks, right?
Yeah, and they can do that much faster. They can do that in two turns, and then it can potentially deprive someone of draw for much longer, of more of the game. But you're sort of equating discarding 37 cards versus gaining 15 power, and you still have to declare challenges to discard the cards quickly or gain your chains or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And on some of those challenges, you're going to get power for free. An unopposed challenge gives you a power for free, gets you 1/15th closer to your victory condition. How many of those challenges are netting you free cards? Not that many.
I agree. I mean,
I'm kind of preaching to the choir, I know, here, but there are listeners who still think, I don't mean that in the way it comes off necessarily, but that have some attachment to some of these mill effects that I just cannot justify. Because
I still see people building heads on pike decks. They're like, it's turn three, I'm going to mill that guy. And I'm like, yeah, but your deck's all about milling that guy and then doing nothing.
Well, one of the most common arguments, I think, is this idea that if you mill a card that he really needed and it goes into the discard pile, that's satisfying. And you're right, it is satisfying, but it's meaningless.
Is it really satisfying?
It is, because he gets a sad look on his face knowing he was going to draw that card and isn't going to draw it anymore. But from the point of view of the game, unless he knew what that card was beforehand, which is either he was sort of scrying through his deck or cheating, that card could have been anything. It could have just as easily been a worse card that he'll be happy to see discarded so that he's more likely to draw into a card that's useful. And you don't have control over that with Mill. You're just discarding whatever's from the top of his deck.
Yep.
Even worse, you could Mill a card that gives him an advantage, like a Royal Entourage. If you Mill the Royal Entourage and put it in his discard, he's happy to see that card there. That's a card he didn't have to draw and waste his time drawing, because it's just as good in the discard pile.
And this is the major issue with Mill.
It's still only one of the major issues with Mill, because
The major issue is you don't win by milling.
Well, even if
it might be an advantage.
You wouldn't start. Because you might give an advantage. And, okay, I should at least say there is some advantage to milling. When I mill a card from your deck, I get to see a card from your deck, so I know a little bit more about your deck. But you also know more about
your deck.
That's
a stretch.
You also know more about your deck, because when I discard your Danny, I go, oh, okay, he has Danny in this deck, so he probably has this, and that's his restricted, and that's important information for me to play around. Sure. But you go, oh, okay, now my chance of drawing the Danny has been reduced. And see, so I get qualitative information about your deck, and you get quantitative information about your deck. Just like a Black Sails deck being thinner I get to look through my hold, and then I have more stable information about the cards I have remaining. Mm-hmm. So really, you have to weigh the two against each other, and also tell yourself, how many cards did you not know that your opponent had in his deck to start with? So the wilder his deck, the more important milling would be as a form of getting information. But in most decks, you're actually giving the person who's been milled more information about what he's likely to draw, rather than you information about what's in his deck.
So what you're saying is mill sucks, Alex?
That's what I'm saying. So okay, I've wanted to get that off my chest for a while. Obviously, it's like basically monologued and rant about it. But if a card mills on top of doing something that independently of the mill you like this card, it has an effect related to mill. I may never ever trigger it, but it doesn't make the card worse. Because it's tricon and it's useful. In some cases, milling might make the card worse, it might not. But I would never really consider mill as an advantage. Not with the current state of the game. Not with cards like Millicent.
This is one of the last chapter packs ever to be released. Never, is basically what you're saying.
Never. If the final chapter pack proves me wrong, I will, I don't know, eat my hat on air. And you'll all know. It'd sound great.
Yeah, I don't really want to hear you eating your hat.
I don't have a hat.
Good.
All right, John. Do you have any closing comments? Anything to add at the end?
No.
I guess that's everything then.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
It's, you know, the community, basically. And my wife says I get to get away from my wife and kids, she says it's a bonus. So
a bonus for her?
A bonus for her, yeah. So she's got her mouth open. I think she's trying to give me trouble, but...